myself going in the near future. I also have to add, Madam Chair, that Mr. Khumalo has actually joined us from the first, actually formally from the 1st of April, but effectively 3 days ago. And we are very grateful because we hope that now we do have a full-time CEO, and we do wish him well in the agency. Madam Chair, may I please hand over to my colleague for the presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Anne. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it gives me pleasure to introduce the presentation that we will be presenting to yourself today. As the Deputy Chair of the Board has indicated, I've only really been with the cross-border since last week, Thursday. The letter of appointment says from the 1st of April, but due to a number of issues, I'd never got that letter until last week, Thursday. So it only meant that I couldn't go to work until I had a letter of appointment that says I'm appointed. So I only got there last week, Thursday. But that's not the real reason or the real issue for today. Why I'm giving this background is that I might be found wanting. I'm going to leave the presentation, as I believe it is my duty to do so. I was advised by some of my executives that perhaps I should allow them to lead because I'm only there for 3 days. But I said, once you are in, you can, you've been asked to captain a ship. Whether you've been there for a day or two, it's your duty to go and do what you've agreed you will be able to do. So I'll lead the presentation, even though I may not be able to defend it as well as I would want to be able to. And at some point, I'm going to ask my colleague, Makosa Zana, to assist me when we get to specific issues. And also I'm going to ask Mr. Stearman also to assist us when we get to specific issues. When it comes to support by the shareholder, I'm going to ask the Deputy Chair to just reflect on that, because indeed, as Deputy Chair, I think she's best placed to respond to that part. And then I will come back again at the end to just conclude and wrap up the presentation and maybe to give a few highlights here and there. The way the presentation is structured is such that we'll give you an introduction. I hope everybody can see. It looks like our font might be a bit small. We will then speak to our legislative mandate, because I think that's the most important thing that we need to keep emphasizing. There's a reason why the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency was established, and I think it's very important that we reflect on that reason and make sure that whatever we do, we're guided by that mandate. We'll then talk to the implementation of the strategic plan. Really, that part is following up on the discussion that took place at the workshop that the Chair has referred to. And then we're also asked to indicate our state of preparedness for in relation to FIFA 2010, which is 51 days away from today. And there we will really reflect on assumptions and statistical information that's at our disposal, the state of law enforcement, and regulatory issues. Then I will, at that point, so we will move on to this part five of the presentation, which is really reflecting on the support by the shareholder. And this specifically is in reference to the Department of Transport, and our Deputy Chair will lead that part, and then we will then conclude. Just to reflect on what does the Act of the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency say in relation to the existence of this agency. First of all, in our preamble, it says that we've been established to improve unimpeded flow of transport by road. And that means freight and passenger transport in the region. We're meant to liberalize the market access progressively. We're meant to introduce regulated competition. We are meant to reduce operational constraints and to enhance and strengthen the capacity of the public sector. And finally, to empower cross-border road transport industry to maximize business opportunities and to regulate themselves incrementally. Now, the questions that will then have to be asked if we were to develop, you reflect on our strategy, is whether indeed what we're doing as Cross-Border Road Transport Agency is improving unimpeded flow of transport by road in this region. What is it that we're doing practically to improve that flow of transport by road? What is it that we're doing to liberalize market access? And how are we regulating competition from both the passenger side and freight transport side? And what are those operational constraints that operators are facing? And what is it that the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency is doing to reduce those constraints? And I suppose then our strategy will need to be judged against this backdrop of whether, in fact, what we claim to be doing in terms of our mandate is, in fact, responding to these imperatives. The legislative mandate speaks to provide for cooperative and coordinated provision of advice, regulation, facilitation, and law enforcement in respect to cross-border road transport. Now, these are the core functions of the cross-border road transport agents. We're supposed to be providing advice to the executive, the Minister of Transport, the department in relation to cross-border matters. We're supposed to be regulating, in other words, making sure that cross-border movements are regulated with permits. We're supposed to be facilitating that in terms of the relationships that we have with our counterparts in the SADC region as a country. So there we're supposed to be having committees through which we facilitate interactions and with a view to improving the unimpeded flow. And finally, we have a duty of enforcing compliance in relation to the permits. In other words, if there are unroadworthy vehicles from across our borders that are coming into our country, we're meant to be enforcing and ensuring that such is not allowed, and also making sure that whoever transports goods in our country has got the necessary permits for doing so. So if, at a minimum, even if the cross-border were to fail to do anything else, these are the four things on which you need to judge us. And if we fail to do these things, then in fact the question has to be asked whether we have a right to exist. Now, just in terms of the implementation of our strategic plans, and this is broken down into areas. In terms of administration, and this is looking into compliance and governance. One of the challenges we have is the increase of tariffs for permit income. You will learn from the budget information from Cross Border that our permit income has not been increased since 2004. So we're sitting and we're charging permits based on 2004 figures. And then we are surprised that Cross-Border Road Transport Agency doesn't have the means to do some of the things that it is meant to be doing. We're meant to be driving change management transformation within the agency itself. Our performance management systems in the entity, again, when you look into the average size, age of a computer in the cross-border, I'm told it's at least 11 years old. You still have computers there that cannot be connected wirelessly, that cannot run your latest computer programs like your Windows Vista and so on. And yet we wonder why we cannot perform optimally or respond to the imperatives and our pressures if our systems are in the state they are in. The cross-border road transport agent, cross-border road transport system that we're using, is a system that was developed in 1999, and that system collapses every second or third day, I'm told, and that system simply cannot be improved upon. It's a DOS-based system. We're living in days when systems are based on your Oracle, open, and you are able to modularize your systems and so on. That's not the system that the cross-border is using in terms of, and the system that we are regulating operators in terms of. Now, some of these things may look like mundane issues and issues that are not that critical. But in fact, unless you have the tools with which to do your work, and unless you've made provisions to be able to acquire and secure those tools, you might be found wanting. Imagine going to war in today's terms, if I may use an analogy, with a 303 rifle, and hope to be able to stand against whatever foe you're facing. Imagine having to use the kind of aircraft that was used in the First World War, and hope to be able to face an enemy. And I'm just using this as an analogy to indicate, in fact, that apart from anything else, cross-border road transport agency is faced with a difficulty insofar as just the tools that are available, that are at its disposal. And that's one of the things we need to reflect on in a very, very honest way and see what can be done about it. Then there's this issue of audit. I believe that the cross-border has never had a clean audit in its entire existence. It was formed in 1999, and between 1999 and today, this agency has not once had a clean audit. Now that begs a few questions. Why has this been so, and how come that we've never had a clean audit? And in fact, what has been happening? Why have we allowed ourselves? But that audit also relates to the systems that we have, amongst others, the quality of systems that we have there. I'm also going to allow my colleague, Makosazana, who is the Chief Financial Officer, to really give you more insights around this area. And we think it's important that we open and we share these realities so that you know, and when you judge us and when you assess the progress we will be making, you have a basis of saying, these are the things that we ourselves would have shared with you, Chair. And you can then be in a position to say, have we made progress in respect to these areas, in respect to these issues? We need to formalize all operations by developing operational manuals. We need to create financial models for each function, which will allow the agency to fund its mandate. Currently, you would know that the cross-border road transport agency is one of the few entities of the Department of Transport that does not get any allocation. There's no grants that we get from the department. So all our operations are financed through permit fees and through fines for that we issue for permits. And that the question needs to be asked whether, in fact, a regulator like the cross-border road transport agency needs to be financed in that way, and whether, in fact, that is adequate means for financing an entity of this nature. We need to furnish the minister and other stakeholders with timely and relevant advice, information, and intelligence concerning sudden cross-border road transport. Now, the question is, do we have that intelligence? One of the reasons why we exist is to advise in terms of reducing costs of transportation across our borders by road. And the question is, if we're having the kind of systems that we're having ourselves, are we in a position to gather useful intelligence? Are we, in fact, in a position to advise anybody about what's happening across our borders when we don't even have a presence in our borders ourselves? And these are some of the issues that I think we need to reflect on. We meant to conduct feasibility on law enforcement function and regulatory function in order to provide an accessible service to all commercially viable border posts, to establish representative offices at SADC and SACU, a South African customs union, yes, and regional offices within SADC to improve on cross-border impact, presence, and relevance within SADC. That's another very important part, and this would go a long way towards just supporting all other efforts of our country in terms of improving the relations but also we meant because the assumption, strange as it may sound from our SADC counterparts, is that they actually see us as an entity that can assist them, when in fact our own state of affairs is far from acceptable. But the reality is there is an expectation at SADC that we ought to be providing that leadership in terms of systems and so on. And there's an opportunity there which could be exploited for the full benefit of, and that would be in line with our own international relations agenda as a country. But indeed, as things stand at the moment, we are in no position to exercise and do the kind of influence that we could be having at the level of SADC. We're supposed to source suitable cross-border road transport partners within SADC, both from public and private sector, with a view to co-funding, magnifying, and multiplying our impact. There is, for instance, your Trans-Kalahari, if I may use that as an example. You have partners there, both from public and private sector, that corridor, the management of that corridor. And the cross-border, we ought to be having an important role to play in respect to those corridors. And it's not the only corridor. I'm just using that as an example. You have the Maputo corridor as well. And we could be doing all sorts of things with a view to facilitating trade across our borders. There was the whole issue of one-stop border posts, reducing delays at our border posts. And as cross-border, we ought to be having, at least from a transport perspective, we ought to be having a role to play in relation to those. But I guess some of these at this stage, you know, when they say when your house is on fire, you don't think about planting gardens. So some of these things, you must first extinguish fires. And maybe that's the state we're still at. But I'm just indicating these with a view to indicating what the horizon allows for. And in fact, if we're able to do some of these basic things and put them to bed, there's a lot of exciting possibilities in our purview. We're meant to be executing research and gathering information to improve on information on business opportunities, community development, crime, job creation, law enforcement, poverty alleviation, road conditions, because insofar as they impact on operations, trade activities, and traffic flow within the region. And we also need to be facilitating and concluding outstanding bilateral agreements. You know that we have bilateral agreements with all the countries with which we share borders. But we also need, because there's a lot of traffic between us and countries like Angola, DRC, and Tanzania, and we also need to be entering into bilateral agreements and concluding those with those countries, because there's a lot of traffic that's shared between us and them. We're meant to establish advocacy and consultative forums with key stakeholders and our SADC. I think some of this has already been stated before. Now, coming to the resource constraints, one of the items you asked us to address in the list you send us of agenda items, you asked us to indicate what are the capacity constraints that we're facing. And from a funding perspective, we thought that we should mention this issue of the funding model for cross-border, that agency has been self-funding entity, and that has only allowed it to cover operational expenses. In the main, the budget of cross-border can only pay salaries. And we have not been able to recapitalize. Furniture in cross-border is falling apart, practically falling apart. And computers, as I've already indicated, average age of a computer at cross-border is 11 years old. And while self-funding, there are these key challenges that we're facing. Tariffs have not been increased since 2004. The penalties that we charge are not consistent and are also discretionary by magistrate courts. And I think this is not just unique to us. You'll find the same thing happen with road traffic offenses as well. And I'm sure if you've met with the RTMC, you'll find that they are faced with similar challenges as us insofar as that issue is concerned. Law enforcement function adds financial strain on the agency's finances and also impacts on our ability to generate revenues. I think we have at least 70 inspectors, and the question has to be asked whether, in fact, what we get from those inspectors does allow us even to cover just at the minimum their salaries. And if not, the question is this the right business model, and what else can be done about that situation? Human capital. The agency clearly has had a leadership challenge. It's been an ongoing and endemic challenge. The chair was reflecting that the agency has had, what, 7 CEOs over the last 10 years? And that in itself tells you a lot of things. The level of morale in the entity is really shocking. People are they've kind of given up on the hope of this agency being able to turn around. You get cynical comments, like I say, I've only been there 3 days, but very interesting the kind of things people say to you when we hope you'll be the first CEO to last for 24 months, you know. And this is somebody congratulating you on your appointment, saying, we hope you'll be the first CEO to last 24 months. That just gives you the sense of duty of care in the agency is it's just not there. I could give you examples even on developments that took place even this morning, but I will not get into those details. But it just shows you that things have been happening in such a haphazard way that people have even forgotten what is the basic things that you do and what are the basic things that are expected of an executive in an entity or it's really, it is a bit depressing, to be frank. But again, we cannot give up on this. I think we've faced more heavier challenges as a country, and if we've been able to get to where we are, it's our duty to sort things out rather than to celebrate or lament on a continuous basis. There's a high turnover at senior management level. There's lack of performance management systems. I think some of these have and a large number of outstanding industrial relations and labor cases. I'm told that there are cases that are currently in the labor court that date back to 1999 of people that we've either fired improperly or all sorts of labor-related issues which we need to. And because of the lack of leadership, none of these matters have been handled properly from a leadership perspective, and there's just been adding up. So it's really just executive, the caliber of people that we need to be having at the higher level, we simply don't have. Two executives were suspended the week before I came on board. So I'm actually working, limping without even executives. Your immediate subordinates that you need to be working with are not there. They've been suspended. So those are some of the realities of this entity. Yeah, I think some of this stuff I've already referred to, your computer equipment, your furniture. I will not belabor points that I've already covered yet, because some of these I've spoken to even before I got to those specific slides. The inspectors, the visibility of inspectors, the issue of uniform and branded vehicles. We're simply not in a position financially to be able to provide some of these basic tools that would allow our inspectors to even perform their duties. But also there's a culture there where our inspectors, I'm told, are refusing to put on uniforms, which would identify them as inspectors, simply because they haven't done it since the time the agency was formed. So there's also issues also at the change management level of just getting people to appreciate why some of these things are being done. No dedicated roadside checkpoints at border posts, lack of capacity on major corridors. We are hardly visible. I mean, some of us here may not have seen a cross-border inspector in our entire life, and we use our roads every day. I, for one, I have never met a cross-border road transport inspector since, and I use our roads quite often, and I visit Swaziland, I visit Botswana every now and then. I've never even seen what a cross-border inspector looks like. But this is the reality of the situation. I'm now going to ask my colleague, the Chief Financial Officer, Makosa Zana, to take us through budget implications.
Thank you, CEO. Basically, what we have provided is a budget implication in terms of where are we spending the current revenues that we are actually generating. 50% of it goes to the salaries. 43% goes to sourcing of goods and services that are assist us in managing and running the agency. The 1% has likely increased this year because we basically, as we had we indicated earlier, if you look at that, our depreciation before has been expanded due to the accounting, what do they call it, technicalities. What happened normally, if the auditors come in and do the audit, they will find that you have a fixed asset register that is sitting with 1 rand. You either have a choice to extend the useful life while you're using it, or the auditor is then going to say, you're still using it, you need to actually recheck whether the assumptions that we had at the beginning when you initially stated it was going to be 5 years, if it's still applicable because you're still using that. We then were forced to actually extend the useful life because we also did not have a reinvestment, or should I say capitalization model, of saying that when are we going to be replacing those to be able to say when exactly are we going to impair them. Which then is leading up to the depreciation increasing this year because we are also doing the placement of the service which are practical about 8-7 years old. That is why also, even on our computer and equipment capital expenditure, we had to spend at least we are planning to spend at least 4.6 million on that. Permits and application on how our revenues are collected. 61% of that is coming from permits and application income, basically the regulatory function. Finance and penalties is 23%. Within the 23%, please keep in mind, members, that the compensation of the employees on that 50% is at least 60% percentage on law enforcement, but yet the revenue that is generated is 23%. Interest is expected to be at least 950 because we have been accumulating surplus per each year, which has led us to have the accumulated surplus of 10 million, which this year is only just representing 13%. The sundry income basically is the income that we are generating as ad hoc, i.e. being courier, because we're dealing with people who are working from the outside, so we courier our service and we charge them for those. It's basically those admin, including the admin fee when the permit, if you have done the application and the application was not successful, we charge about 15% of the total application fee. Basically, that would be how we're generating our revenues. Ronald is then going to take us through on the future 2010 plan.
Thank you, Kofi, for your question. I'll be dealing with the agency's state of the readiness in terms of the FIFA 2010. Now, first and foremost, I would like to indicate that in accordance with the National Department of Transport's 2010 action plan, there's an estimated 400,000 visitors that will be coming to South Africa for the event. 300,000 of which would be intercontinental visitors, and then 100,000 which would be African visitors. Of the 100,000 African visitors, we expect most of them to travel by road. I think at this point in time, I just need to point out that it's still unsure as to the exact numbers that would be traveling by road, in view of the fact that we are entirely reliant on our counterparts to provide us with those figures. However, I also need to indicate that there are certain practical difficulty in determining those numbers. For one, we distinguish between permanent and temporary permits. Now, in our instance, in the agency, temporary permits can be applied for on the 20th of April and still issued on the 20th of April. These permits are then for a period of either 14 days, 3 months, or 6 months. Now, in view of the easily accessible nature of these kind of permits, we envisage that a lot of our travelers will apply for these permits. In terms of the permits that the agency has issued in the past financial year, just to give some sort of an historic background, for passenger vehicles, we issued 31,849 permits, and for freight, in the region of 74,000 permits. As I said, in terms of the turnaround time for applying for permanent, for temporary permits, you're looking at the permits being issued the very same day. In terms of the duration for permanent permits, you're looking at about the turnaround time of 3 months. This is mainly due to the mandatory publication of the application for permits. Now, having said that, I think it's important to note that in addition to these permits that we issued during the past financial year, whether it be your temporary 3 months, 6 months, or your permanent permits, we would also experience an increase as a result of the 2010 World Cup event. And this increase will then also impact on our major national corridors as well as on our interprovincial and intercity arterial corridors. to just give a background on the permits for taxes that we issued during the past two financial years. This basically portrays the number of temporary permits of all classes as well as permanent permits that we issued. One would note that there was a stark increase in the permits to Malawi as well as to Zambia. When we progress to the later slides on the bus permits, one would also realize that there was a decrease in on those two routes. This is mainly due to the fact that there is some sort of a working arrangement between your bus operators and your taxi operators, where a bus is not filled to its capacity. These passengers are then passed over to the taxi operators in view of it not being financially viable to then undertake the trip. The next slide shows the increase in freight permits that we issued during the last two financial years. Between the two financial years in comparison, there was a 5% increase in those permits that we issued. One would also note that there was a decrease in the permits issued to Zambia and an increase on the permits issued to the DRC. Of course, we do not have an agreement with the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In the past, we only used to issue these permits up to the Zambian border. And in the 2008-2009 financial year, you would see the 13,900 figure. Now, from the previous financial year, we now issued these permits to reach that en route to the DRC. Now we're allocating it differently. The increase in freight vehicles also moving to the DRC is also as a result of the vibrant copper export business in that country. In terms of buses, we had an increase by comparing the two financial years against each other. We had an increase of 144%, and there the committee would see the decrease in the Zambia and Malawi permit that we issued during those financial years. In terms of our tourist permits, these permits are not coupled to a country, but it's basically an open-ended permit that the operator can visit all the SADC countries. Here we've seen a decrease of 14%. I just have to point out that ever since the recession, there has been a consistent reduction in the permits that we issued. I think between the 2007-08 and 2008-09 financial years, there was also a decrease of about 12%. In terms of our law enforcement function, the agency has a road transport inspectorate, which consists of six regional offices across the country. The first regional office being the Bloemfontein Durban office. Here we have inspectors situated in both Bloemfontein and in Durban. The Bloemfontein office focuses on all the border posts around the Lesotho border. That's your Fitzburg, Maseru, Caledonsport, and Van Rooyenseck. And then also on the major corridors within Bloemfontein. And then the Durban office focuses on the Kolela border post, also into Lesotho, as well as the major corridors in and around Durban, and then the port area to focus on cabotage offences. Secondly, we have the Belleville Uppington office. The Belleville office focuses mainly on your national corridors around the area as well as on the port. And the Uppington office focuses on the border post into Namibia. That's now Onsiyekan, Nakop, Alexander Bay, etc. The Kempton Park region consists of inspectors monitoring the N1, your industrialized areas around the Sando, City Deep, the N3 towards Heidelberg, and it also assists on a rotational basis in deploying staff to man the Oshu border post. Then the Nusina Mokopane office consists of inspectors monitoring the N1 in Mokopane and then also the border post towards Zimbabwe. There is now Bay Bridge, Hoglis Bridge, and Grionde. And then the Nelspruit office focuses on the traffic towards the Libombo border post on the N1, Jeffy's Reef, Mahamba, etc. towards Swaziland. And then the Zero's office focuses on all those border posts leading into Botswana. Now, I think the CEO has earlier indicated that we have a severe lack of staff, and I think one can just note this by the staff complement of the inspectorate, basically consisting of 74 inspectors, 5 chief transport inspectors that are responsible for heading some of those regions, an administrative support at head office, and the manager, the national manager law enforcement. However, despite our staff deficiencies, we still need to execute the mandate in within our means. In terms of the 2010 deployment of staff, the National Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee, the NBCOCC, has identified 11 priority border posts that would be of importance for cross-border passenger flows during the World Cup event. These border posts were then first identified from the Botswana side, being Hoglis Bridge, Kopfontein, Ramathabama, and Kerpazek. There we would deploy 20 inspectors. I just need to point out that some of these border posts, like your Kerpazek in Kopfontein, is a 4-hour border post. There, our inspectors will also have to be deployed in line with the border operational hours. Then we have the Namibian border post, which is Fierlsgroot in Nakhok, where we will employ or deploy 3 inspectors. On the Lesotho side, the Maseru border post, 10 inspectors. Mozambique side, Libombo, 13 inspectors. The Swaziland side, 8 inspectors. And the Zimbabwe side, 24 inspectors. Now, I also need to point out to the committee that we, as the agency, have consulted with the provincial BCOCC structures as well as local BCOCC structures, and we have incorporated our deployment into the specific either local BCOCC structure feeding into the national, so feeding into the provincial and then the national BCOCC structure. The type of activities that we will conduct during the inspection, during the event, I think a clear directive has been issued that no law enforcement authority would be working on its own, that we would all work in a multidisciplinary team. So as part of our activities in the multidisciplinary teams, we'll be focusing on high visibility enforcement patrols on roadside checkpoints, where we would check for compliance to our permits, normal vehicle and driver fitness, etc. We will be participating in multidisciplinary roadblocks, assist in overload control management, as our inspectors are also appointed in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, it's peace officers, assist in accident management, and assist with escort duties at the force of entry. Our stakeholders that we would be working with during the duration of the World Cup would be the RTMC, the Provincial Traffic Authorities, Metro and Municipal Traffic Authorities, the South African Police Services, as well as the our SADC member states in terms of their law enforcement authorities, as well as your BCOCC stakeholders, which is now your SARS immigration, Home Affairs, etc. In terms of our key operational challenges, what we foresee is the roadworthiness of public transport vehicles being a major challenge, due to the fact that on certain corridors there's a high prevalence of this unroadworthy vehicles. So one would basically face a challenge with when you impound the vehicle, what's going to happen with the passengers that are left stranded. In practice, currently what we do is we assist these operators to get another operator's vehicle at their cost to just ensure that these passengers are not stranded. Because we are also cognizant of the fact that we cannot allow an unroadworthy vehicle to proceed on our national roads, despite the inconvenience that might be caused to the passengers being conveyed. Because after all, one would be putting their own safety and that of other road users at risk. We also foresee a challenge in terms of resting facilities along the major routes, as we currently already have inadequate facilities available for operators and passengers on our national routes into the country. Then we have challenges with regards to our visibility. I think the CEO also alluded to some of those earlier on. Our visibility in terms of uniform and our visibility in terms of branded vehicles. From the regulatory point of view, how we intend securing a service that is efficient, that is accessible during this period. We intend having extended operational hours for the issuance of this permit. That would obviously depend on the demand, which one can only ascertain once one is within the actual period. We are already disseminating permit and border operational information to our stakeholders, our permit information to our BCOCC stakeholders at the borders, and our border operational information to our stakeholders, our counterparts. We're also looking at making the permit information available on the website. And foremost, we intend having a dedicated 2010 FIFA outlet. It's our undertaking that during this time, all applications that are related to FIFA, which should be of a temporary nature, it would be issued within a period of 20 minutes. I think that has brought me to the end of my presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I will now ask the Deputy Chair of the Board to just walk us through the area of support by shareholder.
Through you, Chair. The agency, I think some of these matters have already been communicated to the DOT, but we just list some of the very critical areas which we had requested for intervention from our shareholder. The first one around governance issues, in fact those two points are related in terms of the process and the turnaround time in filling off positions on the board. We've had a serious problem with that, because it takes quite a long time for the DOT to assist us in filling positions on the board, and it ends up creating a huge vacuum. We've gone, I think, almost half of last year with only five board members, and it has really had a huge impact. Maybe if I may just give you a background, half of the board members are supposed to retire after 18 months. And when that retirement period comes, they are retired. And then by that time, we actually need to have had a process that would immediately fill those positions. So that has been one of the requests to the DOT. On operational matters, we have filed or submitted a request for increase on permits, and that is in progress. We are in negotiations with the DOT around that matter. As the CEO has pointed out, we've last had an increase in 2004. We would like to look at increasing our permit fees so that we could generate more revenue. And then on approval of grants to fund law enforcement functions, or specifically the law enforcement function. As has been pointed out, our law enforcement is in existence. There is a function in their own bodies, but we need to see them branded. We need to have them in vehicles running around up and down, or maybe around the border post, so that their job could be efficient. Right now, if we were to tell you how it is structured, it's just not a very convenient structure in terms of especially vehicles and maybe uniforms and a lot of equipment, offices around the borders and the rest of it. So there is quite a huge support that we would request from the DOT around restructuring this whole law enforcement function. Normalization of cross-border passenger transport between RSA and Lesotho. Last year, we had a SADC in Durban with all our counterparts from SADC, and the session with Lesotho was very open, and we were able to say to each other, here are the terms and the time frames of addressing certain issues. Of course, it is a highly sensitive issue that involves operators from South Africa and Lesotho, and we are also mindful of the fact that it could actually be volatile. But we are approaching the minister also to assist us to address this issue. We have submitted, we haven't submitted necessarily, but we are looking at a paper or a submission on closing some of these illegal taxi ranks that are at the border post, because that is the crux of the matter, and that is the whole issue that has made this Lesotho matter to be out of control. So we will be submitting a report to the minister to assist us in facilitating the closure of these taxi ranks that are illegal. These taxi ranks are on our side, on the South African side. And we also would be requesting for support in facilitating conclusion of the bilateral agreement. As has been said, we do have trade relations, or some operators have trade relations with Angola, DRC, and Tanzania. We'd like to also formalize that, because at the moment it's very, very, very loose. We would request for support from the DOT in facilitating those. I would then hand over to the CEO to do a formal closure.
Yeah. Thanks, Deputy Chair. Chair and the committee, I think this brings us to the end of our presentation. As you can see for yourself, really, this entity can be, you know, if one were to use an analogy with a sick person, it's really like a person who's in an ICU. I think the first challenge we have is to stabilize this patient and hopefully get them to high care before we can really even consider releasing them from hospital. I think that sums it up, really. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will now ask the department to present
My name is Chulile Zwalo. I'm the acting chief director, border control operations. And with me, I'm with Jacob Mekwa, who is the acting director, performance management and analysis. We both from the branch public entity oversight. So we prepared a presentation, having looked at the invite, we've seen the support by the Department of Transport. So we thought maybe we should just prepare a presentation just to share with the members what are the support structures within the DOT to support our public entities, including the CBRTA. So my presentation outline would be the background, the DOT support to the CBRTA, and the structured DOT forums to support our public entities. So as the background has been already outlined, I would now move to the fourth part of the background. I mean, the background had the CBRTA legislative mandate and the objectives of the CBRTA, which has been covered by the CBRTA. So I would move to the fourth aspect, which is the role of the public entity oversight within the DOT. I think the public entity oversight branch was created to oversee public entities' compliance with government policy in relation to their strategies, the business plans, the corporate governance, financial management and operational plans through monitoring and evaluation processes. So within the public entity oversight branch, we have four units, which is finance, which looks at the financial part of our public entities. We have governance, which looks at the governance issues within the entities, like filling of boards, board performance and board remuneration. And we have performance management and analysis unit. So the performance management analysis unit is responsible to see that public entities have performance agreements, they have strategic plans, and they report on quarterly basis on their progress with regard to the performance agreements and their strategic plans. And we have agency development and policy advocacy, which looks at agencies that are developing to make sure that those agencies are up and running and delivering on their mandate. So So in executing the oversight role, the public entities that are facing challenges that affect their service delivery needs to be assisted to execute their mandates. And we view this with in partnership with our line functions within the department, who are the expertise in the DOT public entities. And then with regards to support to specifically the CBRTA, we have the governance matters, which is appointment of the chief executive officer. It has already been indicated, the CBRTA has been withheld the CEO since the departure of the CEO in May 2009, and the board commenced with the recruitment process to fill in the position, and now we have Mr. Nsipho Khumalo appointed as the CEO of the CBRTA, which we hope as the DOT would be able to take the CBRTA forward. And then in terms of filling in of vacancies in the board of the CBRTA, we have a process commenced within the department to appoint the new members for the board of the CBRTA, and this process has commenced in August 2009. I think this is what the deputy chair has indicated upon. So there is a process in place whereby new members will be appointed. And then in terms of rotating the board members, there are three board members that need to be rotated, but for now their term has been extended for 18 months by the minister. It was extended last month, I think in February or March. So their term has been extended for 18 months until we rotate them after 18 months. So that process is also in place. And then the other aspect with regard to the support to the CBRTA specifically, upon looking at the strategic plans of the CBRTA, as a public entity oversight, we realized that there are serious challenges within the CBRTA that requires our intervention as a department. And what we did is that we proposed a due diligence or a review of the CBRTA, because the challenges that we're facing the CBRTA have been continuing over a period of time. And those challenges, like the CEO has indicated, is the high management turnover, the high increase on overhead costs than revenue, limited revenue streams, non-compliance with corporate governance matters, resource deterioration, like COSI has indicated, and the reinvestment plan that is non-existent, lack of planning, risk management, and performance culture, and with the qualified audit in the past years since 1998. So we therefore propose to have a review of the CBRTA. And the review was to assess the extent of the challenges. What are the real challenges facing the CBRTA, with the emphasis on the future role of the CBRTA within the transport industry? So in this regard, the review will take into account the CBRTA's performance since 1998, as it has been indicated that it has qualified audits since 1998, taking into account its history, past performance, as measured against its mandate, objectives, and functions, and to assess whether the advice provided by the CBRTA to the minister on cross-border is relevant, is informed, is independent, and as well as its impact and usefulness. And also to assess the level and the existence of collaboration and partnership with other stakeholders within South Africa, SADC, and whether they are fostered and maintained, those relationships. So the reviewers look in deeply into the CBRTA and pick up the challenges, the real challenges that face the CBRTA, and come up with recommendations so that we could have an implementation plan on how we move forward. So in this regard, a review panel was identified, and the review panel consisted of experts within the transport industry, and the review was to take place last year in November, during December, November and December, but the review was put on hold due to the new minister in office and the DG in office. So there were issues that they need to look into before we can do that. But for this financial year, I think we will go on with the review and really look into the issue. And the other support intervention by the department is that there was a border control framework study that was done last year. The border control framework study was completed, and the report now has to be tabled to EXCO of the department. And the work was done by the consultants. And this was, I can say it's a system-wide review, because it does not only focus on the CBRTA, it focused on all our entities that have functions closely related to border control, your ATSA, your ATNS, and other entities that with the mandate closely to border control. So the aim was to review the existing mandates relating to border control, including the roles of each public entity, the responsibilities, and interrelationships between various organs of state and governance structures regarding border control and management. And it also discusses the key international and regional agreements, like they've indicated that there are regional agreements that the DOT needs to intervene in making sure that those are finalized. So the border control framework also reviewed those regional agreements and protocols, and as well as national policies and procedures, to look into how we can strengthen those existing regional agreements. And then the implementation gaps and challenges were identified based on the analysis of those documents. So the findings and the recommendations relating specifically to CBRTA, because they were findings and recommendations relating to ATSA, to ATNS, and the like. So the ones that really relate to the CBRTA, these are the issues that were raised by the Border Control Coordinating Committee, which is the BCOCC. That is the lead agency in terms of border control operations within the country. So the BCOCC stated that the CBRT is not represented at the one-stop border post. This one-stop border post is created to enhance border security and trade chain security, to reduce waiting time for vehicles at borders, and also to reduce transport costs. So in this regard, this function of the one-stop border post is closely related to what the CBRTA ought to do. So as a result, the CBRTA also has to be involved in that regard, according to the BCOCC. And also that the CBRTA is not represented at the BCOCC. And then also in terms of issuing permits or licenses to taxis, a strategy is required to have advanced information in terms of road traffic. I think in this regard, an example was given that we have trucks, maybe we have 10 trucks from Mozambique coming to the country, and we also have trucks that go to Mozambique. So when all the trucks get at the border post, it creates congestion. So there has to be an advanced information system in terms of road traffic. So this information system should be in place to ensure proper allocation of resources and management of traffic flows to avoid congestion and possibility of corrupt practices. And then in terms of traffic flow and management, a model is in the process of being developed to manage traffic flows at the Lebombo, Bay Bridge, and Maseru border. And then here also the BCOCC indicated that the DOT and the CBRTA should play a role in this regard. So briefly, these are the findings and the recommendations which relate specifically to the CBRTA. And the last aspect is the structured forums within the DOT to support our public entities. The first structured forum is the Public Entity Oversight Committee. This POC is a subcommittee of the DOT EXCO, and it has been established to address and integrate matters of oversight over public entities with line managers and DOT representatives on boards of public entities. So in this regard, like the POC meetings are also used to discuss strategic plans of entities. Before the strategic plans and performance agreement could be submitted to the minister for approval, we need to have a POC meeting where the entity, the line function, and the public entity oversight would come, and the entity would present their strategic plan. And if there are any issues or the challenges that the POC together with the line function pick up, then we would raise them with the entity, and the entity would be required to go and relook at their strategic plan before we can present it to the minister. So that is the POC, and the CBRTA has been called to the POC to present their strategic plans and their performance agreement in the past. So the POC are held to allow entities to present their strategic plans and performance agreements to the line function and public entity oversight branch. And this committee is chaired by the DDG, Public Entity Oversight and Border Control Operations. And these POC meetings are also held to address the specific challenges facing the entities. And the second structured forum to support our entities is the governance forum. This governance forum is also chaired by the DDG, Public Entity Oversight and Border Control, and is attended by company secretaries of entities, and the meetings are held per quarter. And I think this is one of the forums that really addresses the governance challenges pertaining to our entities. And the issues discussed are related to governance of entities and challenges experienced. And the third forum is the DG CEO forum. This is chaired by the DG and attended by the CEOs of the entities. And then with the appointment of the new DG, the forum has now been formalized. And there were two meetings held in the past financial year. I think it was in March. During the first meeting, the strategic priorities of the DOT were presented to the CEOs of entities before it was presented to the portfolio committee. And the other meeting was held to discuss input to the budget vote of the DOT. So at that meeting, at the first meeting that was held, it was suggested that this meeting, this forum, should be held at the end of each quarter. Because if you can remember, public entities need to report on a quarterly basis on their progress, performance with regard to their performance agreement. So this forum would be used for CEOs to present their performance program as outlined in their performance agreement. And then another structured forum is the Minister Chairperson Forum. This is chaired by the Minister of Transport and it is attended by chairpersons of boards of entities. And then one meeting was held in March with entities. The minister called entities to brief him on the core business, their challenges, and the required intervention from the DOT. And the entities that presented, they presented their challenges and their intervention measures taking place in that regard. So we can say the forum is really working and it's really benefiting public entities in terms of their challenges that they are facing. And the fourth support by the DOT is that we have a DOT representative on the board of the CBRTA. The minister has appointed the representative to provide support and to ensure alignment of CBRTA strategic direction with that of the DOT. So I think the appointment of this DOT representative would also be beneficial in terms of giving strategic direction to the DOT and also reporting back to the minister in cases where there are challenges that require the minister's intervention. So briefly, these are the DOT interventions really to assist entities, and there has been a lot of interventions with regard to the CBRTA as an entity that we have identified with very serious challenges that require our intervention. And as the department and as the branch, we strongly believe that if the review would take place during this financial year, it will really come up with strong recommendations that will take the CBRTA forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I now give the opportunity to the members to ask questions and make their input. Honorable Jeffrey.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few questions, if I may. I'll start with the first presentation. I'll just rattle off the questions and whoever's able to answer, I'd appreciate that. It might be a silly question, but why has the CBRTA never had a qualified, always had a qualified audit? Your bilateral agreements you talk about, what is the content of this agreement? What's the essence of what this agreement is about with our neighbouring countries? In your presentation, you said that the law enforcement function is contributing to your financial strain. If you could just unpack it and explain what you mean by that, because I thought that would be one of your mandates. Then you mentioned a whole lot of labour court cases that go back as far as 1999. Why is it taking so long, firstly, and why are these cases gone to court in the first place? In other words, why has proper legal labour practices not been followed in the first place? And the CEO mentioned that two executives have been suspended. Why is this the case? What is that about? Then you talk about expenses on your capital expenses. If you could just unpack that and just give us a little bit more background there. I see there's also a dramatic increase in your DRC numbers. Why is this the case? And from what I understand from the presentation is that your measurements are different. If this is the case, then surely your table is incorrect because you're not measuring apples with apples. And so it gives a distorted figure of 20,000%. So maybe if you could just unpack that and correct that slide. Then you mentioned cooperation with other stakeholders. That seems to be lacking. If you could talk to us about that. And you mentioned resting facilities and the lack thereof. Why is this the case and what's been done in this regard? Then there are a whole lot of measures that have been put into with hotlines and so forth during the World Cup. Is there a marketing advertising campaign to tell South Africa about the existence of the agency? Because without people knowing about it, your facilities aren't going to be used. And why are there problems in filling your board vacancies? What seems to be the problem that your board vacancies can't be filled and need to be extended? Then I want to just ask, there seems to be an overlap in your terms of reference with what the board should be doing and what the CEO is doing, because from the presentation, it looks like the acting chair was talking on operational matters that the CEO should be dealing with. So is there clear delineation, understanding of who does what between board members and the operational side? And then lastly, Chair, it mentioned there was a whole lot of illegal taxi ranks that exist. If you could just tell us why are they illegal, what makes them illegal? And how does one legalize it? Because to me, logically, I would guess there should be some kind of taxi ranks or something in certain border posts. Thank you.
Honorable Maluleke.
Hey, let me first congratulate Mr. Kumalo on his appointment. But I'm quite interested to know why there's been this serious turnover. Because and I'm saying this because I just congratulated Mr. Kumar, and I just hope whatever made this other CEOs to leave it's not going to encounter there. And you know, I think all the other things that Mr. Khumalo has raised is about the equipment and serious staff turnover and all this. I think maybe the deputy chair could also assist in this too. What really, where is the problem? Where do we have? Because this other operational matters may just be because there is a bigger problem. So I would really like us to be informed about that. What is that? But, you know, in congratulating Mr. Kumar, I just want to wish him, you know, strength, because it seems that as we started it. And I wish you will get it right. Thank you.
Honorable Faro.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to just offer my old friend Sipho Khumalo all the very best, and I don't ever want to know that you are not going to last more than 24 years, not 24 months. But in our sort of language, we talk about sometimes being thrown into the deep end, and if you looked at my gestations when you were announcing that you had just started and you felt a little bit, there's a thing called swimming. If you don't swim, you sink. Now, you've got two very good, from what I listen to and I hear from both the strategic planning presentations, members of your executive. And, you know, sometimes one has to take what you have and use them. And I hope and trust that you will look at that and try to get the team together, which will allow you to go right down to maybe the minimal requirements, and rather fix what is right and get it working before you look at trying to just go into major expansions. And I just want to say here that I need to know that that is not going to happen until we consolidate and get the ship on the road first. Then we can talk about SADC and, you know, regional offices and things like that, because in due respect, we do have consular generals in all those particular states in SADC who run trade offices specifically for the purpose of trying to encourage trade businesses and such like between our countries. And that would be your point where you could also use your abilities to get the message across as to what people need to know about moving transport and goods and freight and passengers across the border. So I appeal to you, that maybe that is an opportunity that you must start looking at to ensure that you can get, you know, that right. So people, when they cross the border, they don't come there without permits and they say under eyes, you know, or something like that. We need to get that marketing which my colleague talked about and the message across it. So with that particular introductory, I think that the first thing I want to suggest too and propose and ask why it hasn't been done before is that if you've seen the deterioration in income arising, not only about the increase in traffic, but because of the fact that your overheads are costing so much to do your job, why then has the board not 5-6 years ago, since 2004, not applied for an increase in your tariff? And this brings me to the whole aspect of board and its governance. Now, the way I see a board, and I do this in due respect to you, Ms. Ali, because I know you've done a very fine job and I'm aware and conscious of the roles you've had to play to keep this ship afloat. But you've got to understand that board's responsibility, their prime responsibility, is to see that the entity that is concerned is in compliance with the PFMA in terms of all its operations, and that includes ensuring that it can meet its ends at the end of the day in terms of paying its bills and paying its operating costs, etc., and to ensure that they are put on track in terms of some of the decisions that are taken by management that could either adversely or conversely affect the business of that particular entity. That is what the governance roles of boards are, and I raise this because I had concern about it in my speech, and I'm sure the chairperson will be aware of it, to the minister saying, look, we have a discrepancy in terms of some of our oversight roles, because although we have oversight over this entity as parliamentarians, we don't have oversight over the boards who are there functionally reporting directly to the minister. And Tricks and Tween, you know, they should be seen in partnership with us when they are coming here to Parliament to present to you, and you are the first CEO board presentation we've had in this house since Am I right in saying that, madam? Well, maybe there might have been one other board that came, but very few of the board persons actually come to these presentations here. And we want to know that there is an interaction and that relationship there between the two, because otherwise we feel then that we are missing out on something that is not happening, and we could, you know, either direct our attention to the department who has a role to play there. So that's just a long way of saying, please, you know, we must avoid the problem of deciding where the lines of responsibility fall. And, you know, even the department is wrong, I might add, Chair, in appointing a member of the board in an acting capacity of the CEO, because that, in effect, is a total conflict of interest, as far as I understand. And we had the same thing arise, if you recall, in the RTMC. And where is the RTMC today? Pelilino, if you know. Because of that. Now, please, I just want to warn the department. I'm not saying anything. At the time, it might have been expedient, because we didn't have anybody there, you know. Number 8, number 7, whatever is gone. We've got a rudderless ship. We have to put somebody there. But you cannot move a board member into a management capacity. It happened at SAMHSA with Christmas. The same thing. It was a disaster. Please, I just want to warn this department. So good governance relates on the separation of those powers, and the actual conflict of interest must not be seen to happen again. I've spoken about the static representation. Use those embassies. Depreciation. That is a board decision which management puts to them on an annualized basis as to how you're going to decide to run your assets down. Now, you might have assets which are 11 years old that are worth 1 rand in the book, but please don't think that they are now worth 1 rand, because that is another failing that has happened, where people give away these things, like, you know, because they're worth nothing in the book. There's a value to everything, even if it's a debt that is 11 years old. And I'm asking, please, that you very carefully, CFO, look at the processes of how you disperse those assets when you replace, because they could add to the value of the new asset that you're going to buy or replace, or to recapitalize what you have. And there should be a very clear depreciation policy of which the board should be monitoring and following on an annual basis. Let's just go to the readiness story. Now, we've just come back from a oversight visit on all the 9 host cities. In every one that I went to, and I don't know whether the chairperson can report on her side, there was also major concern about just the knowledge of knowing how many people could be arriving. And I never saw anybody representing the CBRT at any of the meetings that I attended. I asked specifically whether the local organizing committee had liaison with them. They said no. Because these are major concerns to the people organizing this particular World Cup. You've got Rustenburg, for instance, very close to the Botswana border. We could expect 30, 40 buses coming across from Gaborone, I don't know, anywhere, with a lot of fans on board. And those numbers need to be slotted into the arrangements for every one of the World Cup facilities. Not only the parking of those buses, the actual, is that the gong to say, I'm going to stop talking on it? And then also, you know, so what I'm trying to tell you, sir, is that you've got to look very carefully, and you've got to get round very quickly to liaise with those particular host cities, particularly where they are close to borders, to make sure that those people are aware of the arrangements, because they're going to arrive there and they have to be directed into certain places where they can disembark and how they're going to get there from the grounds in terms of whether they've got a ticket, they're going to the fan park. There's all that stuff missing, and it's a big gap and a big worry to all of us here, I'm sure. Okay, if I can come to the department. There are big problems, I think, in terms of your presentation now, in the sense that you've got a whole lot of meetings, 5 of them, and every one of those 5 meetings don't come up with the means of trying to resolve the problem we are facing with here, for the simple reason that if those meetings are these new forums, or they're old forums, because my understanding is that we changed the legislation some 3-4 years ago to ensure that this relationship between the department, who is at the end of the day responsible for this entity, and ourselves in an oversight role, actually been able to pick up where things are going wrong, be it human resources, finance, or anything that they're doing which should not be done. Now, we appointed on every board an ex officio member of the department to represent the department there, to hear and to listen, and to also give guidance to those boards in respect of policy, strategic thinking, direction, things of that matter. Now, where has this broken down that the department hasn't been in a position to be able to react timelessly to the problems and the demise of these particular, this parastatal? Is it because, Madam Chair, that they are self-funding? So therefore the department thinks, hey, you know, let them go on. They've got their own money. They're not going to come to us for anything. Therefore, we don't hold them accountable. Because if that is the case, then we've got to look seriously at this model in terms of how we're going to ensure that if something is not working in one of these entities, that the alarm bells are recorded, that Parliament is made aware of it, that we can then go and investigate. Because at the moment, nobody holds, we don't know who in the department holds who accountable in these particular entities. See what I'm trying to say? So the DOT representative on that board, in an ex officio capacity, maybe needs to be given maybe more teeth, in the sense that they can then intervene where they see something that is not in line with policy, that is not in line in terms of the PFMA, and then we can then at least be aware and conscious of that is taken care of. So that is the big thing, that the board member just sits there from the department and just listens. You know what I'm saying? If that board member is going to be doing something, that's got to have teeth, Madam Chair, and maybe we must look at that act again that we passed a couple of years ago to see whether, as a major stakeholder, that they don't have more teeth in terms of being able to report back to us. I'll leave things there. There's little bits and pieces which I'm sure other members will pick up on, but I just wanted to say that to you. Thank you.
Thank you. I would request members to be short in their input and be very specific. Honorable Dam. Thank you, Chairperson. Congratulations, Mr. Khumalo, on your appointment. By the look of things, I hope you'll be able to stay longer than the others, and you are not going anywhere. You'll take this ship forward. Chairperson, what they presented to us today, we had most of these challenges during our workshop. But in my own opinion, I'll not blame the CBRTA alone or the department alone, but the portfolio committee, who saw the birth of this baby, must have made follow-up to ensure that this baby is nurtured and everything functions well. And to the board, the last time we had this presentation, I thought that there was no board on this entity. By the way, these things are happening. So the board is also partly to be blamed for all this, because if you have 7 CEOs left the entity, even 2, you might have some question as to why this is happening, what is wrong there. You might want to go there and try to check the real reason behind this thing, but 7 is too many. To the department, I'll say, I don't know whether the department was around when this thing was formed. I don't understand, because the department should be the overseer of all the entities to ensure that they are functional. The CBRTA, in my own opinion, Chairperson, I think this is the most critical entity within the department, because they're the one who should create revenue for the department. And on the presentation about the borders around our country, we have many borders, but your inspectors, I definitely doubt if the inspectors are able to to monitor each and every border. You mentioned few borders on the which are monitored by the NELSPRIT office, your NELSPRIT office, if you say so. But some borders are left. We don't have only this. There is Mananga border, there is a Josephstal border, and I don't know how your inspectors are able to monitor these borders. Because the people, if they know that they don't have the necessary documents, they communicate with each other. They'll check with the others, where are they? They'll say, okay, today they are stationed at Lubombo border, then they use Mananga or Josephstal border gate. And with this Kempton Park office, I have a problem here because I don't understand, because the distance from Kempton Park to Oshoek is too long. How long does it take your inspectors to be there and to ensure that all the road users comply? And this will come to the situation where illegal freight transport will come into our country without paying anything. Then one other thing, Chairperson, is that we mustn't concentrate on having offices outside the country. We must first do it within our country, within our borders. Then one other question that I have is that do the provincial departments of transport knows about these offices, the regional offices that you mentioned, Mr. Stirman? Because why am I asking this is that I used to work for the department, and people used to come to the department in Mpumalanga to ask for the cross-border offices, and we refer them to Pretoria. So this is the first time we know that we had about regional offices, and when are these established? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I do want to say that one appreciates the frankness and honesty with which our colleagues have made their presentation, and also appreciate that it does seem to me that there is a new determination to take on the challenges that they are facing. I do want to understand, Chairperson, just about two or three things on the third page. Where you talk in your preamble, where you talk about liberalizing market access and reduce operational constraints, but in the next page 5, you talk about increasing tariffs for permits. I don't know whether I'm understanding that well. Doesn't it sounds to me a bit of a contradiction where you say you want to liberalize and reduce, you know, constraints, but then you want to increase tariffs as well. If you could explain that. Secondly, when you talk about the inconsistencies in terms of penalties and such penalties being subject simply to the discretion of magistrate courts, are you suggesting that there is need to relook at legislation, or is it simply operational weaknesses? And lastly, you make reference to concluding outstanding bilateral agreements. I suppose you're talking about bilateral agreements referring to cross-border transport. And not trade agreements. If you could clarify that as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will now ask for us to break and have two YC to deal court, and then come back to respond to the question. The EC.
Thank you. Can I talk to you for a minute? I'll look down. Well, I'm quite no aware to you are on the agenda, but I must say I'm quite thankful to our manager of women. Quite back to the pain, I think. I don't know how it affects you as well as your management. He's a very mature person. I like him a lot too. I think he's quite a vindictive person. In a committee meeting, I just wanted to quickly ask you to, okay, ask, could you, you want to ask Ellen to put the phone for 1 second? It's about all the stuff in the caucus before now, I just think, James, it's like maybe a quick opinion. That archive stuff is so valuable to somebody, it should actually be put in the safe hands, either in the National Office, because you can't certainly stay in Parliament with no room. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, surely there are some recent cases, regional offices or branch offices that can handle and take away from us those DA and bookshelves. That's the second thing. Is it going to be a complication? Well, that's all our students are going to get the Parliament to do. After all, surely they could be responsible for certain things that have been out of their that you've occupied for many years. Would they? They won't take me out. Okay, but I'll talk to you about some of that. so I'll let you know, because it's sort of a piece of the so I'll cheers now, bye.
Where's Dr.
Chikos? Isn't she our ex officio board representative on all of us?
No.
Okay, I will now hand over to the CEO to respond as well as the department.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for holding the meeting up. We're just trying to decide who's going to answer which questions, and we didn't do a good job at it because time was not on our side. But what I'll do is I'm just going to, I'll indicate with each question, Chair, who will answer, because like I said, I'm not really in a position to answer all questions to your satisfaction. And the one thing we want to insist on is that we should be honest and frank. So I don't want us to also gloss over issues. So those questions that I think I can handle, I'll handle. But as for the rest, I'm going to ask my colleagues to assist me.
The first question from Honorable De Freitas was with respect to the issue of qualified audits. Why have we had qualified audits since the time the CBRC was constituted? I noticed the Honorable Member is not here. All right. So I'm going to ask my colleague Kosi to just answer that one.
Thank you, CEO, through you, Chair. The qualifications are basically the incompleteness of income. Let's start with the first one on regulation. Our system that we are using, as it has been indicated by the CEO, do not have adequate controls for making sure that the income that we are recording on the book is complete. And one of the reasons has been the application control on the system do not exist, nor are we actually documented. We further engaged on this project and relooked at what was the terms of reference of the service provider who was assigned to actually develop the system. It did not exist, nor were there any records subsequent for us to make the service provider accountable to that effect. The general control within the system either did not exist, people sharing passwords, the system actually in havoc in terms of general controls that are required for the auditors to place a reliance on the information that is coming in. Basically, this regulatory issue is institutional because also the processes and the procedures and the business process that are actually within the system were not actually documented down, which then make it difficult for auditors when they come. They're asking about segregation of duties. They ask about isolation of compatible functions which do not exist within the system, which then make them to say, we cannot rely on your system, nor can we place that reliance to be able to express an opinion. The last thing also has been the recording keeping. We have the Act of Archives Act that prescribe on how we should be keeping our records. But because of non-compliance with those certain legislation, keeping of a record has not been documented down. I think 80% of us, I think 18% of that, we could not find the actual application to actually give the auditors the verification of those documents. The last item, which is the penalty income. Penalty income accounting policy that we have on the book says we should be recognizing our revenue on actually issue of the permit. However, the actual operation of the of law enforcement institution, the processes that are in place, do not actually record the transaction in terms of the policy. Again, we have re-looked at that. We have actually, again, it's still an institutional thing because all this time the institution has been recognizing this revenue as it is in the books. However, the operational part has not been in sync. It's actually separate.
Thank you.
And then Madam Chair, because I wouldn't like us to come to the committee and be crybabies. It's important to also indicate what we are doing about it. As bad as the situation is, as the board, we have requested that there be a 100% clean audit program that has effectively started from, I think, last year, October or somewhere there. And an action plan is in place. It can actually be provided even to the committee members. That action plan lists each and every audit query that the auditor has raised and also the actions that are being taken or that have been taken. As I'm sitting here, I know that there are certain areas that have been attended to. It's a standing item in our board meeting and also in our executive committee meeting. So that area is being attended to. And the systems issue, I know that Ms. Mvulane is also busy with upgrading the system currently on a temporary basis, which is one of the critical audit queries. So, Madam Chair, there is an action plan that is in place. And we would like to see all those queries being addressed as quickly as possible.
Then the second question, again, also from Honorable De Freitas, was around the bilateral agreements, the content thereof. This question ties in with the question also asked by Honorable Kwabaza regarding whether these are the trade agreements or bilateral. I'm going to ask Ronald to deal with both questions, but the content is the same.
Thank you, CEO. Through you, Madam Chair. I think one just needs to point out that these agreements are, in fact, bilateral road transport agreements. The primary objective of the agreements are to establish mechanisms for the regulation of cross-border transport between, for instance, South Africa and Mozambique. But I think as a broader underlying objective, it also is the element of trade facilitation, the element of promoting socio-economic development within the region. The content of this agreement basically outlines the consultative forum that needs to be established between the two countries, its constituency in terms of who should form part of it. It makes a mention of certain mandatory meetings that has to be established and executed on an annual basis, as well as to who should form part of those mandatory meetings. It then also provides for the exchange of information in terms of permit applications, because we have to refer these applications to our counterparts and vice versa, certain timelines attached to the referral processes, exchange of information on our permit statistics, exchange of information on our law enforcement statistics, etc. So, in essence, it seeks to then therefore regulate the road transport side of our agreement with our counterparts, and in the broader sense, it seeks to in sync with the trade agreement, then also promote trade amongst our countries in the SADC region. Thank you.
Then the third question is related to enforcement and financial strains, and I would ask my colleague Kosi to just explain why, what's the relationship there, because it seems like the Honorable De Freitas wanted to know whether we're saying enforcement is the cause for our financial strains.
Thank you, CEO. Basically, it is a financial strain to an extent that we are saying the financial model of how we are running the institution, we need to look at that and say, how can it actually run efficiently without actually having this burden? It does not necessarily mean that we are saying it's bringing in, because basically people will not actually come for regulation if there was no law enforcement at all. So it does fit into that aspect, but what we really need to look at, how to efficiently run it to be able to sustain itself and the regulation itself, to look at the financial model. Thank you, Sid.
Then the next question was about labor courts dating back to 1999, and the question was, why is this so? I think I need to point out that none of us, in fact, were there back in 1999. But this is not running away from the answer, because the answer really, we ought to have answers if they were the systems of archiving, of documenting issues in the organization were where they ought to be. But I'll use one example, Chair. I'm aware that there's a past CEO, Mpato, whose matter is in the High Court, High Labor Court at the moment. It's one of the CEO who was dismissed. I'm not sure of the reasons, but it's one of those cases of somebody who's gone through the CCMA, through the different law courts and so on, different levels of court. It's now, that matter is now sitting at the in the High Court. And I know also it's been a huge, huge financial drain on the agency. I'm not sure exactly how much we've spent on legal costs on that matter. But really, some of the things that I've picked up, and if I may just reflect on this, is you have some gross incompetence in the organization. And sometimes what people do is they then act impulsively. If somebody doesn't do basic things that you think you give an order and an order is not fulfilled, and I'll use an example. There's a workshop, for instance. Somebody was instructed to cancel a workshop with taxi operators last week Friday. This particular person did not cancel the workshop. Right, and the taxi operators came there, they almost burnt the place down, because they were traveling from Nelspruit, from Limpombo, from Rustenburg, and so on. A pure, simple issue where a functionary was given an instruction, cancelled that workshop, and the functionary did not. Now you then act impulsively, right? And then you fire this person without following due processes. Now, because we have a constitution in this country, this person will go to the labor court, and the labor court will say, did you go through the due processes of disciplinary and so on and so on? You know, so a lot of these issues are issues where the reason for firing or taking action against the person might have been correct, but the manner in which we went about doing it might not have been. So it's a lot of those kind of issues where so that will be, I think, the essence of it. But again, we will not always have the facts. Of why a lot of these issues are there, but we just have to deal with them.
Labor cases, have those people are still being paid, or there are some that are not being paid?
I think most of them are people who are not being paid anymore, but who feel that they were dismissed incorrectly or that their rights were violated in one way or another. There are two cases of people who are still being paid. Those are the executives that were suspended just 2 weeks before I came on board. Those, because they're still going through the disciplinary. In fact, there was a question that related to that. Maybe let me also take the advantage of an. One of these executives has been suspended because the organization decided that the building that we're occupying as an organization has become too small for our needs. And a decision was then taken that CBRCA should move into new offices. So they went and procured or secured offices that we're going to rent. But for some reason, an executive who was assigned with this responsibility didn't do some basic things like making sure that our F office will fit into these new offices, making sure that you get architects to come and arrange the offices so that they meet with our requirements and so on. The time for moving came, which was February. And the new offices, we've already signed the lease agreement, but the offices, it turns out, they are not ready. Now you have to negotiate with the landlord here to extend your stay. You've signed a lease agreement on the other side. Now you end up with a situation where you have to pay for two facilities when you can only occupy one. Now, I believe that that's the reason why this one of these executives has been suspended for that. It's just basic negligence and lack of, I don't know. Now, some of these things you don't really, I don't even have ways for them. But these are some of them. And this thing is going to come back. This thing is going to appear at Scopa, because right now, I can tell you, we are in trouble already. In terms of the PSMA and so on, we are already in trouble because of one individual who didn't do a basic thing they should have done of making sure that if you are assigned to handle a move from one set of offices to another, you make sure that the new offices are ready in time when you have to vacate your old offices. But because of that one individual, it's going to be the whole cross-border that will be crucified and so on and so on. But these are just to illustrate some of these of these things, why they happen. On capital expenses, maybe you should answer that.
Basically, the question that was raised was, we need to unpack the capex. Can maybe someone rephrase that question for me to be able to answer it adequately?
Honorable, to phrase that, I think it's from the
point. It was question number 6. Okay. So we'll proceed until
and move on to the question on DRC then. If you look into slide number 16, it will show that the numbers of DRC have jumped from 19 to 3,835. I'm looking under freight historical terms statistics information. Now, that's an increase, right? That's an increase of 20,084%. The reason simply, if you were listening to my colleague, Stirman, he indicated that previously these were handled as part of Zambia. Now, you'll notice that there's a decrease of 29% where Zambia is concerned. And that decrease in Zambia correlates with this increase in DRC of 20,084%. That's simply because previously those permits would have been routed through Zambia, and now we're issuing direct permits. But I thought we explained this in the presentation. And then if we move on to the other question with cooperation with other stakeholders. I think the question was, how do we cooperate with them? This is the DOCC issues. Can you just speak to those, Ronald?
Thank you, CEO. Through you, Chair. I think I'll combine this question with a later question that also was posed with regards to whether the provincial departments know about our provincial offices. First and foremost, in terms of cooperation with our stakeholders, it happens on two different fronts. Firstly, from a facilitation side, which the Act primarily prescribes as to who are our stakeholders under Section 35. The Act therefore then determines that we need to have a corridor or route-based forums. Now, these forums normally take the form of route management groups, which is also been prescribed in our bilateral agreement. If, for instance, then indicates that your municipalities on the corridor on the route, your SARS partners, transport authorities on the route, your subs, etc. That is basically from the facilitation perspective as to how we determine our stakeholders. The legislation actually then goes further and also determines that on a more senior level we need to have consultative forums with our stakeholders such as Home Affairs, the Department of Trade and Industry, etc. Then on that's on the facilitation side. On the law enforcement side, we consult mainly with our stakeholders on the BCOCC level, because it's where we need to deal with operational levels, operational matters on the ground. Here we have all the agencies that are attached to the border that forms part to the BCOCC, and there we engage on both a local BCOCC level, which would be specific to a certain border post, and then also on a provincial BCOCC level. We then also consult with our stakeholders in our neighboring countries, our law enforcement stakeholders. So in a nutshell, that you get the facilitation stakeholder that is identified primarily by our legislation, and then you also get the law enforcement stakeholders that are identified primarily by means of the BCOCC reference. But we also have engagements or relations with both our metro traffic authorities, our some of our municipal traffic authorities, and then our provincial traffic authorities. For instance, on the N4, we have relations with Mpumalanga provincial traffic. That basically emanated from problems that we had with the province on that route. One of the challenges that we faced was that our inspectors were not easily identifiable. The province didn't recognize them. So how did we resolve this issue? Was to have a bilateral with the province, and then we subsequently established a working relationship. On the metro side, we, for instance, have MOUs with the Ekurhuleni Metro and with the city of Joburg. This we use basically to try and sort out problems around ranking issues, illegal operators within the city center, etc. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The other question, Chair, I think there's another question relating to resting facilities, why we don't have these, and then that was related also to the question of marketing and advertising of our readiness. Can you just carry on with those as well?
In terms of the resting facilities on the route, I think our mandate is clear that we need to promote the seamless flow of passengers and goods across our borders. One of the factors that we also need to take into account is the subsequent facilities that might be needed by in terms of promoting this free flow. Now, in this regard, we need to have some private sector involvement? Because as the agency, we're not in a position to put these facilities there on our own. I just need to point out to the committee that South Africa is a signatory to the Trans-Kalahari Corridor Group, and we fully participate as the agency within the secretariat functions and activities of the group. And one of the objectives of the TKC is also to foster this public-private partnerships in order to get funding from our private sector stakeholders to provide for some of these facilities. We quite recently informally also discussed formalizing our relationship with, for instance, the MCLI on the N4 corridor, as well as with the Walvis Bay Corridor Group, which also sees to the freight movement from our Durban port right up to the Walvis Bay, or even via the Trans-Caprivi into Angola and then into the DRC. So from the agency's perspective, it's merely to slot into this private sector corridor management groups and to try and influence and secure public sector funding for some of these resting facilities. In terms of our marketing campaign for 2010 in respect of the agency, I have to be honest, we haven't done much due to financial constraints, but what we've done basically in terms of getting the message out there is to interact with the BCOCC 2010 committee through our marketing and communications division, basically disseminating information about the agency to these stakeholders. We've also, in terms of our permit information, disseminated same to our provincial and our local BCOCCs. But on our counterpart interactions, we've basically had a SADC in Daba, which was held last year in October. We had various objectives with the Indaba, one of which was to rekindle the relationship with our SADC counterpart, secondly, to share information on the effectiveness of bilateral agreements, and then also to share information on the 2010 World Cup plans, where we then secured presentations from some of our cities, members of the LOC, the National PCOC, in terms of what their plannings are, etc., etc. But I think what we would also take kindly back with us is the advice of Honorable Farrell that we have to also use our embassies and consulates in our neighboring countries. In terms of the illegal taxi ranks, I think Honorable Defray has asked why is it illegal. I think it's common cause that the provision of public transport and ranking facilities is a concurrent competency of both the provincial and local government. Now, if you look at where these most of these facilities are situated, it's in the border mouth, where the jurisdiction of your provincial and local authorities is seized. It's primarily then the National Department of Public Works that is responsible for that area. Although we've had certain challenges in terms of getting them to accept the responsibility for those. Now, we have various border posts where we have this problem. One is Maseru Bridge. We've got one at Oshuk. We've got one at Bait Bridge. And the list goes on. Now, it creates a problem on various levels. First, in terms of congestion at the border post itself, it impedes the free flow of goods and traffic across our borders. It also creates road traffic risk, and also security risk from a national point of view in terms of ensuring the security integrity of our borders. Perhaps I can also illustrate this by an incident that took place at the Oshu border post last week, when a truck was parked within the port of entry. The truck started moving and it ran down one or two buildings at the border post. I think one of the officials then passed on. Now, these are some of the things that we want to see moved away from the border because of the inherent risk that it poses. But also, of course, it allows a situation where we are limited in effectively implementing our bilateral agreements as well as our multilateral agreements, because our agreement also determines that for transport, for road transport, you'll have a point of departure in your country of origin, and you'll have a point of destination in the foreign country. Now, allowing an operator to move from Carltonville, for instance, up to Maseru Bridge is an indirect violation of our multi and bilateral agreements as well. And we see the move of those illegal facilities, in addition to all the other reasons, also primary that we need to implement our bilateral agreements. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll now move on to questions asked by Honorable Maluleka. The first question was, why such a high turnover in the cross-border road transport agents? I think it's a multiplicity of reasons. And perhaps here, if the board will allow me, the committee will allow me to indulge by maybe also drawing back on my previous experiences, because I've been a Deputy Director General in the National Department of Transport previously. And one of my responsibilities partly was allowed me to have some familiarity with what was happening in the cross-border. So if I were to draw on that experience, I think one of the first mistakes that happened right from the time when Cross-Border Road Transport Agency was formed was the scaling of the executive position. The CEO of the Cross-Border Road Transport Agency back in 1999 was appointed at the level of director in government. So that was the caliber of person you could attract. The executives who were supposed to be reporting to that CEO were at the level of deputy directors in government. So I think historically this is where our problems come from. There's a saying that if you want to attract monkeys, pay peanuts. I think in cross-border you've seen a classical implementation of that. We've really been attracting monkeys because we've been paying peanuts. And that has, to a large extent, been responsible for the high turnover we've experienced at this particular agency. And because of that, then, you have people who battle with basic things like systems and processes. Cross-border has never had systems or processes in place. I'm telling you now that Kosi tells me, and she's very excited about this, that finally it's happening. This is 10 years down the line that we are beginning to address things that when you form an entity, those are the very first things you attend to. I was tasked to put together, to constitute one of the entities called the Railway Safety Regulator. Even before I appointed the CEO, I had to make sure that the systems and processes were in place. When Msengwa Mofi was appointed as CEO, I sat him down and I said, these are the systems and processes, these are the structures, this is what. Then you've given that guy half a chance to succeed. But if you're going to just form an entity, get some monkey to be CEO, and there are no systems and processes, then, of course, you'll have the situation we've had at CrossBot. You get a zoo, indeed. And that's what But I think that's... and then the issue of equipment, systems, and the reason why these things are that old is largely because the cross-border was never financed. It never got funding. So cross-border had to actually fend for itself using monies that they could get from permits. And those have never been adequate to meet the needs of the agents. This agency has actually never operated at the level it's meant to be operating at. Even now, we're talking about 70 inspectors, and we think that they are a financial drain on us. Yes, they are, insofar as corruption and lack of management controls and so on that have allowed them not to actually issue permits, but to issue on-the-spot fines, as they call it. But bottom line is that number is way, way too small for us to be effective in terms of enforcing the permit. So it's a combination of things. Sometimes you end up with a situation where the system as a whole is self-defeating. You have a small number of people who are inadequately paid, who do all sorts of wrong things, who are not properly managed, and it becomes a combination of, you know, so I think a lot of it boils down to that. But the one thing I'm happy about is you get a sense that there are people in the cross-border who want to see these agents work, and hopefully one can build around those people and try and turn around the situation. Then a lot of Honorable Farrow's questions were not really questions. It was words of wisdom, really guiding us in terms of how we, and we appreciate that. We appreciate the advice and but if there are specific questions, those related to the board and the board's failings, and I'm not going to address those because the Honorable Deputy Chair is here, and I'm going to ask her, and I'm not throwing you in the deep end, but I just feel that some of these board issues, it's not my place to get into. But before I get to those, if I may just address some of these other questions, then I'll ask you to respond. Honorable Lamine asked some pertinent questions. One, with respect to the inadequate number of inspectors, and I agree with him. We don't have hardly enough inspectors. The inspectors we have are not where. And the Kempton Park office. It's also curious for me that a cross-border chose to have an office in Kempton Park. And maybe somebody will still explain the logic to me, but in terms of so far, the briefing I got from Ronald, it did not make sense. It seems to me like somebody was, maybe had a house in Kempton Park and wanted to locate themselves conveniently close to home. But this is not factual. This is just my conjecture. But it's very curious that we have an office in Kempton Park of all possible places. But maybe I still understand. So there's a possibility that there are things that I don't understand yet myself. Yes, there is, Honorable Kobaza, there is determination to take on the challenge. One benefit I have is I know about cross-border. So it wasn't like I was hoodwinked, nobody fooled me. I knew I was inheriting chaos. But I said to myself, there are two things that can happen. If you inherit chaos and make it work, then you would have, that could be the thing that will take you to other levels. And I felt that in my career it was time that I took on a massive challenge of that sort. I just hope that Honorable Farrow doesn't get me fired when he discovers that I'm paying for two offices when I'm occupying one. Because he can go to the media, you know, on those kind of things and get you fired. I thank you.
Thank you very much. I think all the members got an opportunity to ask questions and make comments. I just want us to focus a little bit and ask ourselves as to whether today we dealt with the problem, the real problem of the cross-border road traffic management agency. I've been reflecting on this since the presentation of the workshop. And I've been trying to go deeper and find as to why 7 CEOs would leave an organization. Why? And the questions that came into my mind are this: what role did the board play to ensure that they reduced the staff turnover, especially the CEO? And what did the board do to ensure that the agency delivers on its mandate. I also ask myself as to what role did the department play over the years, and what role did the Portfolio Committee on Transport play? Because if this agency has always had a problem, yeah, audit report, that was an indicator of good thing, there are problems, which the Portfolio Committee should have actually focused on and challenge the board and the department. Yes, of course, the board doesn't report to the Portfolio Committee, but the department reports to the Portfolio Committee, and the board and the Constitution allows the Portfolio Committee to bring any body and any structure in front of it. It is in the Constitution. The Portfolio Committee has powers to summon even a person that does not account to that Portfolio Committee if they want information. It is in the Constitution. And we have just experienced that the Portfolio Committee on Communication performed that perfectly to deal with the board of the SABC. I think that we cannot afford to dwell on the past, but we can use the past to determine the future of this agency. I also don't believe in putting a bandage on the wound, and then think that this wound is going to heal. If I can use a very strong language, about development language, I don't believe that when there is shit, you can put grass and think that the smell will go away. That is a very strong language used in the development aspect. When you are trained as a developer and a community developer, you are always told that you should focus on the root cause of the problem. The problem is an indicator to you that there are underlying factors. And to me, 7 CEOs leaving the agency tells me there is something very wrong with the board. I may be making a mistake, but I would want us now to focus on the board, because it is not going to help us to say we have a new CEO. This agency has been having new CEOs, and they have been leaving.
We may sit here and appreciate that there is a new CEO, only to find that 1 year down the line, the very same CEO that we are congratulating today will be gone. Because we would have failed to probe the root cause of the problem. Yabona indoda mayilokhu ishada, kudlule iminyaka emibili divorce, iphinde ishade kudlule 2 years idivorce, idlule ishada. There's something wrong with that man. So you can't question the wives that are leaving. You have to question the man that is being left by the wife. What I've also identified here is that in the presentation that we had in the workshop, the focus was more on operational issues, whereas operational issues are based on the foundation of governance. If there is no foundation, there is no governance, you can have a very glossy operational strategy which can never be implemented because you have failed to deal with governance issues. Question that I want to ask men: what was the board doing all these years when the CEOs were leaving? And how was the department dealing with that? Angifuni ke mina ukuchitha isikhathi ngikhulume ngepresence yelento of the offices in the borders, what happens, and look at this and say, because this presentation is what the department is supposed to be doing. It doesn't tell us that the department has done this with this agency. This presentation tells us that the department knows what it is supposed to do. It doesn't tell us that the department did what it was supposed to do. This presentation doesn't tell us what the board has done. It also doesn't tell us how the board wants to deal with the situation. The answer to the challenges of the cross-border agents is not the CEO. I would want to further probe the capacity of the board and the role of the board. You see, in this country, if the party that was voted in by the people, the ANC, failed to give direction, nothing would happen in this country. One would not blame the judiciary, one would not blame parliament, one would not blame the executive, because the party that has to provide leadership is failing to provide leadership. Now I want to tell you, Mr. Khumalo, somebody now is open up. You know, I'm saying this because I served in many boards. I was part of Umgeni Water Board when it had serious problems.
Ongeni Water Board performed well because the board began to lead. Not the CEO of the entity, not the CFO of Ongeni Water Board, but the board members. So I don't want us to waste time here and focus on this. We need to focus on the root cause of the problem. The board has to first tell us what is it that it did all these years when the CEOs were leaving. What was the role of the board to ensure that this agency delivers on its mandate? Mini problem angiyibone kufanele sifocuse on CEOs that are leaving. We should be focusing on why the CEOs are leaving. Why this entity gets a qualified audit report. Why this entity is failing to deliver on its mandate when there is a governance structure. That doesn't mean that I don't appreciate what has been presented. I do appreciate this. But this is a bandage on top of the wound. I want us to squeeze the pus so that the wound will dry and heal. So that is my analysis. And I would want members now to comment on what I've just said, because that's how I see this problem. I see the problem beyond this. Honorable Farrow, followed by Honorable Defressor.
Chairperson, I didn't want to go as far as to do what you say. I could have quite easily have done that, because in my initial assumptions, I indicated clearly that there was failure on two parts. One on the department, and the other on the board. And I know that Mr. Kamal has asked the deputy chair of the board to respond to me, but I think that would satisfy me in terms of what I was asking in the first place. I said two things. I said clearly there was a merging taking place between the operational aspects of this organization and the clear defined operations of what I believe a board was there to do, and that is to look at good governance to ensure that the PFMA and all the other issues relating to that has been met on the one side, and that the department in its own manner or as a result of its own demise, it actually appointed at some stage or other during the failure of these CEOs a particular member of the board into a capacity of actually managing this thing, which is a conflict of interest. And you can't have that thing. And I needed some answers for that, so I assume I'm going to get them. But more importantly is this, that when an audit is qualified, there is a certain process that happens within the scope, for a start, where answers are given. And in those annual reports that are then are submitted, the Auditor General requests there are certain follow-ups and processes that have to take place to rectify those matters. And I don't see anything which indicates to me that those things have been rectified adequately. Now, the fact is this, and I think the new CEO put it in no uncertain terms. The department has treated this agency as a, to a certain degree, a low-level... Sorry, you're timing me. I'm just saying the fact. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it in another way. I mentioned when I spoke to the department that, you know, it appears that self-funding entities are just said, get on with it, because there's no accountability from there where money is actually going into that agency. And the result is that it's just left to carry on and do its own thing without any oversight. The second thing is, which was mentioned also by the CEO, was the fact that this place has become a employment ground for monkeys. That's how he put it. I'm not want to use the same words, but I'm also aware that it was also a dumping ground for the department for any recalcitrant member that didn't operate sufficiently well enough in their own department. They said, we'll take over that, and they made him CEO of that particular agency, which, in fact, all it did was move the problem from there to here. And I can tell you, if you look at the history of that organization, Madam Chair, you'll find that that is exactly one of the problems, because we had monkeys there, to put it mildly. And that has actually caused a lot of the failure of what it is. I think for us to get this bandage out the way, we've got to do some make some radical decisions. The first thing is this, that we need to go and look very carefully at the structuring of this organization and get down to grassroots again. The minimum requirements of this agency, as I understand at the moment, is not being met. We've got to make sure that those things are in place, and that we don't go looking for any expansionary roles, but just to make sure that what we do and what we have, we do well. That's number one. And I think that is going to need a bit of a shake-up, because the CEO's first role is going to go and see where these failures are occurring and how he's going to rectify it to ensure that the morale and the team that he's going to work with in the future is going to be together and working with him. And it might need some tough decisions, Chair, that of, you know, taking the thistle in the hand and, if necessary, getting rid of people who have not cooperated, who are there to undermine this process. I'll just give a typical example. If I was there, if any member of my team refused to wear a uniform or to identify themselves as one of the members of this particular agency, I don't believe he has a role and place in this place any longer. Because your role and function is to actually, in law enforcement, is to be recognizable in terms of the tariffs that you're gathering and also in terms of the penalties that you're actually putting in place. Now, let's just give you a typical example, which I did explain over tea to Ronald. The problem is that you cannot have a civilian standing on the side of the road, stopping a vehicle, crossing the border with either an illegal cargo or, for that matter, passengers, and expect that person to stop. Because with the current situation in the country, that could be seen as a hijacker. Someone might even shoot that particular member, and then we've got a major problem to understand. That person should be in a uniform. He should be standing next to a vehicle which is identifiable. There should be signage up before and behind that vehicle to ensure that the reason why he's been stopped is because there are officials there, recognized and accredited officials of the CBRTA, doing their job. Now, that is number one, that if uniforms cannot be issued to those people and they refuse to wear uniforms, then you've got to actually give them their marching orders, because you cannot do your basic function, and that is to enforce and to ensure that people that are coming across there have the necessary permits. That's number one. The second thing, if I may say so, is that we have to get our systems right, as you quite rightly said, Sibyl. You know, how we cannot separate the aspects of income coming from penalties and those from tariffs and reconcile them for the auditor, then the system, you know, it's such a simple separation of actual processes in a computer. We can do that very quickly. We can also stop any corruption that might be taking place as a result of people now, as you put it, doing spot fines, you know, and those spot fines are getting bucks. So we don't know what is happening, how much this organization is losing in terms of those type of penalties. So we've got to fix that computer stuff up. If it means having to find money for you, those are the type of things the chairperson is asking. What do we need? What are the steps we need to do? I'm giving you some of them. But I would suggest that if we need to get additional funds, we need to recommend to the minister or to the department that we get rid of that antiquated system that you have, bring in a system that can hold everybody to account. Then there's no excuses in terms of how people operate, where the money's going, where it's coming from all these stations. We also need to look, Chair, at how this thing needs to position itself in terms of its operations. Now, I understand there are so many border posts and there's so many personnel. We need to go and, with those stakeholders that were mentioned earlier, get an office at every border post. I mean, is that not a simple challenge that will ensure that at least we know what's coming over and what's not coming over? If the traffic doesn't justify us, maybe we can go to that particular station once a week, possibly, just to do some checks physically. But that office needs to have a shared, maybe even a shared office or facility with one of the other agents of government. I don't know. It doesn't necessarily have to have, you know, its own building. But if you go to any other border post, there are those facilities there to get your insurance and do the other things, third parties. Why can't we have a CBRT office at every one of these stations? And the last but not least thing is that the need for vehicles to be pulled across the road, off the road, at border post, maybe a kilometer after or something. We've spoken about this before. And the difficulty, obviously, is to find sufficient and money to do it within the road construction budget. And this is something SANRAL should be approached to ask for and do for you, because they know how to do it and what the law says in terms of the access to that thing and the egress out of it that it doesn't cause safety problems on our road. And at every border post where there is vast traffic of this nature, we should actually have a place where you can, your officers can pull those vehicles off, check, get them moving on again without any congestion at the border post, which you spoke to about. I'm just giving some suggestions. You asked, madam, what do we do now from here? And I'm trying to get rid of the bandage and saying these are some of the action steps we've got to really look at. The other aspects of the structuring and the processes, well, they are an internal sort of management thing, which I'm sure the CEO will take and address. But I think immediately what we must do is get the uniforms up, get the vehicles into place, get those particular people into offices with the various things. We don't want them in Kempton Park, really, people. It's better, that's your head office, and you can use that for international faxing and contacts and keep your control mix. It doesn't matter where that office is. But these roles that you're actually looking at in terms of the legislation is at, in the field. Simple as that.
Honourable Malule.
No, okay. I think
I think that really was my concern, what you just raised, because when I didn't put it in so many words, you know, and I think what the CEO is saying, you must give him a chance, and he'll. But I think, you know, I don't think that with regards to the administration and so on, I don't think that yes, you know, but as you said, there may be a problem that we need to look at. What is that problem? And I, like I said, you know, maybe the deputy chair could assist in that. You know, what's the problem? Because you advertise this position, people know that they are being offered peanuts. They apply for them. So why don't they stay? Because they apply for those peanuts. What makes them not to stay? Yes, that is my concern. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to lead on from what you were saying and what the previous speakers have said, and that is that I would like to suggest that the CBRT go back, do some soul searching, do some kind of strategic introspection and strategic plan at how to fix the problems that you highlighted, and then after a certain period then come back to us to tell us what is their road to recovery, what are their plans, because we're not going to do it here. And so we see these improvements, and perhaps regularly we would have every few months them back to make sure that until they're up on their feet and running, that they map up some kind of detailed plan to recovery. It won't be an easy one, but at least if we see these improvements, and if it means perhaps we have to fight to the minister for extra funds, whatever the case is, then we can justify it if the minister will then see that this agency is actually getting itself going. So that's my proposal. Thank you.
Honourable Tom.
Thank you, Chair. My proposal is the same as Honourable Freitas, that it would seem that there is some cash injection that the department must give to the entity for its operational efficiency to meet its mandate. That injection must be calculated, and that it must go down over a period of time. If it is 1,000 rand a month, after 6 months, it must, be decreased, depending on whether the agency is indeed achieving its full operational efficiency. That would be the first thing. The second thing, the injection must look at the day-to-day administration. It must look at the structure and how that structure is capacitated. It must look at the functioning of the board. Because to me, again, Chair, I don't know whether we are saying the board is appointed for 18 months. How many months? 3 years. Because that chair, it's a problem. We need to look at how we want some stability and consistency on how the board is being run. Because I'm just looking at whether you have an opportunity to have subcommittees of the board following on key issues. I think that must be looked at. But that must be as a result of this strategic retreat that is being suggested, the strategic retreat that is being led by the board itself and the department giving a key backup support to the strategic meeting, and the department agreeing to support financially all the decisions that are taken there for a period until this operational efficiency is reached by the entity. Thanks.
Honorable Dawes. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'll agree with you, Chairperson, with what you have said, to check on the root cause of all these problems within this entity. My question will be, we know there is a board. If they meet, what is it that they are discussing concerning this entity? So I think we'll need to know if they are able to meet as a board to check on the functionality and all the things that my colleagues have mentioned. That's all, Madam Chair. Thanks. Honorable
Paul on there.
Thanks, Chair. Honestly, I think you nipped it on the bud. You know, at some point I've been silent throughout the session. I thought that maybe I'm in a wrong session. Because my understanding was that we're going to deal with the problems of this particular entity. But I felt that we spent much of the time dealing with operational matters of it. And that for me, in a way, gave me an indication that maybe I did not capture accurately in terms of what you have to deal with today, in particular with this particular session. I would differ, Chairperson, if a motion that says that we have to have some kind of a strategic retreat led by the board, the department becoming on board, and so on and so on. For me, I think it is the board that needs to be exercised. And we can't therefore have the board itself leading such a strategic engagement. For me, we have to have a session where we engage with the board at length so that we see that if there's a need to lead in exercising of the board, so that we do so. Because I believe, Chairperson, that you are correct in saying the board must provide leadership. You see, the CEO has got the necessary enthusiasm, which is great. But what if the environment is not conducive? Because, you see, it's not only about the person that is coming in. It is about the environment.
And the people that are there.
And in that particular environment, that will then be conducive. You're then going to have to meet people who will also be supportive to the cause. Because, honestly speaking, we might sit here and try to critique the CEOs that have left the entity. But to be honest, you might find that it was not because they were weak-kneed or so on. But it might be because the environment itself has been so polarized that they could not even operate. So since that the CEO, the new CEO is still new, the challenge might be, you can listen to his tone that he knows what he wants to do, he's got a vision, he knows exactly what he wants to do. But maybe there might be some picture that is blurring of polarization that is only going to be realizing as soon as we start running. So I think, Che, what we need is an engagement where we can see whether this animal called the board doesn't need to be exercised. I thank you, Che.
Mr. Bosa.
Thank you, Che. I think if we were in my field, local government, obviously the minister would have been serving now, section 139. Honourable members, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you and I'm saying I wish my colleagues were here, other board members. It's my first time in front of this committee. And maybe just to give you a background as to the type of structure that you have as the board, I think it's only myself and Tuli who is who has a background of the public sector and the PFMA. The rest of the members are from the private sector. And sometimes you do find a bit of a divergence of views in terms of what we actually need to be doing, our mandate to the government and why we are even existing. In some cases, you would even think that, some people think that we are here to make profits. It's all about money and money and money. But I'm not here to backbite and to say anything to the board, I mean to members, except to say that I hear you. And most of the things that you said are very true. That as a board, we really need to look at who we are, maybe in the department. And also, there is a possibility that some of us might not even be part of the board in a few months' time. I think by July, there would be a new board. So maybe that is an opportunity for SIPO to even get into a much better environment where there would be a proper induction, because also, again, that's another problem. You get thrown into these entities and you don't even know, you know, what is it about, and you're not inducted properly like you members of parliament are inducted, you know, and then you get to be told that you have to make decisions. You are fortunate if you know about the PFMA, if you have a background of the public sector. But I'm saying maybe this is an opportunity also from the department side to also strategically think of who are the people and what kind of people do they want on the board. This is me now talking. Maybe I'm taking my cap off being the deputy. It's going to be very critical because there have been frustrations. The understanding of the government's developmental agenda might be different, and in some people is non-existent. And I do take upon my shoulders some of the blame or the challenges that have occurred, like the CEO turnover, and some of the oversight role that we should have played, rather than actually focusing on operational issues. If you look at our strategy, I think I don't even want to talk about the strategy truly, because that's another issue. You would find that is why sometimes things don't go as they're supposed to be, because even at that strategic level, you would notice that it becomes a little bit operational, in fact, more operational than strategic. So those are the things that we are going back and going to relay to the board to say, this is what the committee has said. Maybe this is what other people have identified as weaknesses. And I have to admit that also the DOT has identified these, and they have punched a huge mark on our strategy. It cannot be like maybe 100% blame or placing a blame on them, because they have tried to give direction in one or another. But there is the aspect of saying, you know, here is an accounting authority. They want to do certain things in a particular way, and it just becomes a bit of a problem. And if you're talking of the bandage tear and that wound, I do agree that this is the time maybe to say this wound needs to be healed by looking at who are these board members, how do they relate to the agenda of developing this country. And I agree that we are a highly strategic entity. An entity that facilitates trade. If the CBRTA could close its doors, it would mean that the freight and passengers would never ever enter the borders, because they have to have those permits. So it's a critical element of this government. It has to work. So we will relay the information, and we'll, try and request also the department, maybe for some of us, to sort of like look at strategic issues and get assistance from them to change mindsets just for these few months. But I would think that in the next few months, if the department, the process is continuing, I would request Tuli maybe and Jacob to assist us as to why, whether the process of appointing new board members is going to be finalized anytime soon. I would think, I don't want to dwell on the issues that I know are weaknesses and they've been covered already. But it has actually not been very, very easy in terms of getting our role into the direction that it should be. If there are any other issues, Chair, maybe.
Thank you very much. I just want to also touch on a few things that we need to be at the same level of understanding, because we don't want you to feel that it is us and them. We should work as a team to improve transport-related conditions in this country. What is raised by the Deputy Chairperson of the Board is very, very important. The value that is added by each member of the board. Because we don't want a situation where people that are serving in boards are there to fulfill their needs instead of adding value
to the cause and the mandate of the structure that they serve in. I know of people who serve in different boards and sit in the board meeting and not say anything, but get the stipend, which is more about the member than the member adding value. The other aspect on board is where the selection of the people that are serving in the board, the appointment of the people that are serving in board is not informed by the skill and the capacity of an individual, but is served by the manner in which that individual is, there are people that are lobbying for that individual to sit in the board as a form of employment for that member, instead of the value that the member would add if you serve. There are many boards that are like that, where if a person has been earning a salary and then Gaseko employed, a number of people will nominate that person for purposes of making that person earn an income. And in some situations, people that are serving in boards, they nominate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
How do they do that? They identify individuals and ask them to nominate them. So that person is not nominated because of the value, but that person is able to influence other people to nominate him or her for purposes of getting stipend. One issue that I would want the agency, CEO and staff, as well as the deputy chairperson of the board, a good thing. When members of the portfolio committee raise issues through the debate on budget votes, those issues are very, very important. I remember when we were debating last year on the 3rd of July, we raised the issue of potholes, and some of the officials laughed when we were raising that issue. That issue today is a hot potato in this country. Government is being sued for people that got injured when accidents happen because of the pothole. But when we were raising that, we looked at some of the officials, and in some situations, the MECs from provinces laughed. This year, in our debate, we raised this issue. And maybe you did not understand us because, and also because the CEO is new. What you are presenting is exactly what was presented in the workshop. And what we were asking for now is more on government. So when we raise issues through a budget vote, don't look at who is raising that issue, which political party that does that person come from. Look at the issue that is being raised. Forget how the minister responds to that. Because o minister ukhuluma ipolitiki sometimes. Minister respond to minister who responded to the issues and also udila ne party politics. But for you, as officials and board members, revisit the issues that are raised by members of the portfolio committee during the budget vote debate. because even if that issue is not raised by the ruling party, it means that there are people out there represented by this member who is talking, who is debating, that has seen that issue as an issue in the eyes of the public, which needs a response. I think that we need to make the minister aware, as this portfolio committee, that we are concerned about the state of affairs in the cross-border road transport agency, and also mention to him issues of concern so that we don't miss each other. So I think that we need to make a follow-up meeting. It will be for the first time that the minister would be invited to come to the portfolio committee. And on the same day, we also invite the cross-border road transport agency, as well as the branch within the department, because we want all of us to have a common perspective on what is it that the portfolio committee is concerned about. But I also want to mention one thing. Is it, a meeting that happened last year and issues that happened last year are issues that we continuously reflect on as we move forward and engage. And our meetings of this year are a continuation of last year's meeting, and also everything. Now, I got worried when this presentation was made, indicating Google computers in this agency are as old as 11 years. Then I reflected, I remember very well, Guti, during the budget vote debate of the 3rd of July 2009, in the package that is given to members, there was a small clock. Meaning, Guti, each and every member that is here in Parliament got that clock from an agency that does not have a new computer. Why would we do that? Because that clock is a want, nice to do things. The computer is a need. You cannot operate without it. And there's not a single member that doesn't have a watch and a clock. Why then was it necessary for an agency that is struggling in terms of finances and resources to take the very same finances and buy small clocks for members? This is still there in my house with this sign here, cross board. The very same cross-border that is coming to me to say we don't have money, our computers are outdated. Then I ask myself, why did you buy me a clock when you need a computer? Decision-making and setting our priorities. No one was going to die if members of parliament were not given any presents. But if the agency doesn't have a computer, they are not able to fulfill their mandate. And I was glad that this year there were not such present. Because you can't come to us and cry that a budget here and we in none, but you give ama present anga funwa umuntu engawadingi nina that are not adding any value with performance here. Those are small things but very important things. So in conclusion, I want to say that we are going to follow this up to try and get to the root causes of this, the problems of this agency. We will be meeting and inviting the minister so that we can be at the same level and also agree on how we are going to move forward to ensure that the CEO that has been employed now would not leave. And also to justify that this agency needs a budget when it has failed to perform. Because we can't lobby for the increase of your budget when we ourselves are not satisfied by your performance. We need to first start by dealing with issues of governance and issues of performance, which will then indicate that you are organized to be given enough budget to carry out your mandate. I think I would want this meeting to end at that level. Honorable Malule.
Okay, what it is that we would raise with the minister? I think you left out a board that will provide strategic leadership.
Yes, I think that in that meeting we would also need the board members to be present, together with the CEO, the CFO, and senior manager, Stierman. What is your
legal risk and compliance?
Yes, that. And also the branch in the department that works with this agency. Honorable Faro?
Just another thing which I think we as a portfolio need to get. That was something that was done in your predecessor's term, and that is the amendments to all the various agencies in respect of the act for the appointment of the board members, because in that act they also laid down where we could actually do it, certain competencies and skills that we insisted that were there in that particular one. The other point that I want to also mention to you in that very act is that there has to be, in terms of the minister's compliance, a notification to this portfolio committee of all the shortlisted candidates that applied. We don't want the 50, but the shortlisted final candidate list must come to this portfolio, and we have not been having those, Madam Chair, and I know there might have been board appointments taking place, but that would enable us to also do some sort of an oversight over that, particularly if we know some of the people concerned and there might be conflicts of interest or there might be problems in terms of some sort of criminal charges that would be not being picked up that we might be aware of. So I just wanted to make that aware. Maybe Dinia could actually get that act for us and circulate it at the next meeting. Thank you, Chair.
I think that is an important input. I would want to hear what response does the CEO and the deputy chairperson is on this matter, on our way forward.
Madam Chair, I think really many of the board members who have commented on your summation have indicated that in fact you've nipped the issues on the bat. I think your observations are very, very pertinent. My own sense is that it would go a long way if this committee is its vigilance in relation not just to the cross border, but to all entities within the sector, I think can benefit from that vigilance and oversight. I do agree with you, Chair, that the best thing to proceed, and I like the specific one about inviting the minister, because the truth of the matter is ministers never get to hear the gory details of the problems. Ministers always get packaged information. I know because I was a senior official myself. We kind of sugarcoat what we tell the minister, and so that by the time it comes to the minister, it's more palatable. So I think inviting the minister here will be very useful for the benefit of the cross-border road transport agents in particular. But also, I think that the whole issue of a budget, because we can say what we like, if the cross-border road transport agents remain in the state, it's in financially, then I don't care who you get. You can get Superman, you can get whoever, unless you can provide us with the means to do that which needs to be done, we are not going to be able to. And the permits, I mean, the worst part is the fact that we're operating on permit fees that were valid in 2004. Everything else in South Africa, there's something called inflation. Everything else has gone up from 2004 without fail every single year. Cross-border, for some reason, and in the logic of whoever was there, saw it necessary to keep the permits at 2004 fees. It's no wonder then that we're sitting with the situation we're sitting with today. So I agree with you. But I also think that the chair must insist that at the next board meeting, the board of the cross-border itself should also attend. I think maybe in your invitation it should be made very explicit that you would want the board to, because without getting into our own nitty-gritties, I think it's very important that if we agree to play certain roles as chairpersons and so on, then that should be demonstrated by our commitment, which should be demonstrated by our ability to honor meetings of this nature. So that will be my... basically, I'm not adding anything new, Madam Chair. I'm basically just concurring with everything you've said. But I'm sure the Deputy Chair might have a thing or two to say. Yeah.
Chair, I think on behalf of the board, for me, it's just to say thank you very much for the input, some of which were just very brutal and honest. We really have to go back to the drawing board, but maybe just to add that with the invitation of the minister and the board, surely there should have been some interaction between the minister and the board before we come here, so that we would not again start from scratch. We know the issues. Maybe the minister would have already received a note from the chair to say, here are our concerns. We would have to sit and strategize, and so that we would have a meaningful discussion on that day as to how to seriously turn around the CBRTA. Madam Chair, we thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much. As long as your meeting with the minister would not be to strategize to sugarcoat again. And also, you know, both my comment when I saw you, Buti, oh, this board has done its research, Buti. It must send a person from KwaZulu-Natal and think that I will not be able to brutally analyze. And I'm sure you have seen now, Buti, it doesn't matter. So I'm warning you, yeah, Buti, even your strategic meeting here, need to strategize, will not matter.
I meant to raise it earlier, but is this organization regulated that you have to now apply for increase of tariffs, or is it a purely an internalized arrangement between yourself and the department? Because what worries me is that why can't it happen? I mean, there is inflation. We all know that. Get the new rate up and organize it if there's no regulator.
Don't reopen the meeting. Uzobuza ngale liyalanga when we have. Okay, I think that we have come to the end of this part of the presentation, and we would like to thank you very much for your frankness and your honesty. We are also committing ourselves that we will do everything to ensure that this agency delivers on its mandate. If we need to start by fighting first for us to walk together, we will go that route. But we need to fix this so that we can begin to walk together. Thank you very much. We are now on the... You are free to leave if you want to. So, then we are on item number...
Madam Chair, I had some time to sit with my colleague and go through every one of these minutes that are... Sorry? To have time to go through all the minutes that are outstanding that require some sort of either spelling mistake errors, corrections of English, etc. Nothing material. And I'm going to suggest possibly that I hand this pack over to Dinia. It wasn't her work. It was the work of our predecessors, and they were shockingly written, I might add, even right down to some of the trying to understand what was actually being said there. On the text here, we've done all this alteration. There's also some notes of questions where we didn't quite understand what was trying to be said or asked, in which case we'd have to bring it back to this meeting to get consensus. But what I want to assure the House is that there's nothing materially changing here other than spelling and English. That's all we looked at, and to try and make sense of some of the statements. Can I request that for the matter of expediency, we just give this to Dinia? She goes and does this thing and brings back some sort of a, let's call it, a sanitized version of this, of these minutes. There's quite a lot of them here. And then we look at them again and see that everybody gets adoption after that, because, you know, I think it would take us too long now to go through all these. I mean, you can see it's literally every sentence there's a problem. And then lastly but not least, madam, which we didn't talk about, but in the announcements and tablings of our strategic report to Parliament, there is a gross error there, which I think we're going to have to go back to Parliament and rectify on page 858, and that is the total income earnings for the proposed budget of SANRAL. It's reflected in millions, and I can tell you it's in billions, and we just need to find out that it coincides with what was said there, even if we have to phone up Mr. Nazir Ali. I know he doesn't want money, but I don't think he wants that. That didn't even pay his salary for 1 year. So I want to leave that with Dinia also to have a look at and get on. That's my proposal.
Which minutes are we referring to?
March 23rd
has got mistakes.
Yeah,
12th of April. 16th of March.
16th, yeah.
Can we then agree that effect the corrections, and anybody who has made corrections then can submit to her for making corrections, and then we will adopt them in the next meeting. That brings us to the end of the meeting. I thank you.